Good morning. Welcome back to Task Smart Talk with Steve. Are you listening to News Talk WLOB 1310 AM? Please join me in welcoming Shannon Moss. Hey, Shannon.
Hi, Steve. Oh, it's great to be here.
I feel like I don't even need to introduce you, because if anyone's listening in Maine that is not familiar with Shannon Moss, you must be staying inside too much.
There's people out there that don't know.
There was a line for autographs just in our lobby, So let's no false modesty. So for people that may not be familiar, Shannon, of course, started out in Maine a number of years ago in 1999 as an anchor reporter for Channel 6, and then she was news anchor at WMTW Channel 8. And most recently, she's been producing her own show, Split Screen with Shannon Moss. It was on CW for a little bit, and I think it is now available on the web, which is exciting. So we want to get to that, Shannon. But why don't we start with a little bit of your background in terms of where you grew up, and then we'll talk about how you got to Maine, and then we'll talk about broadcast industry and media and what's going on here in Maine.
Sure. Yeah, well, I'm a roadie girl. I grew up in Rhode Island, so I'm definitely New England, born and bred. And, I love Rhode Island. I miss Rhode Island. It's a great state. It's a small state.
We were talking about Rhode Island a couple of weeks ago. Somebody suggested, because of its size, and is it the smallest state?
It's the smallest state in the union.
That at some point, should they just morph into Massachusetts or Connecticut?
No.
Somebody suggested. I'm saying somebody, and I think it was me.
Probably. But, yeah. There's been those theories that we should just combine with Massachusetts or Connecticut, and absolutely not. It is so small, but it's just so eclectic, and there's so much going on. I mean, there's as many people living in Rhode Island as in Maine.
Really?
Yes. The population is very similar.
It's just over a million. Maine, I think, is about 1.3 million.
And I believe that's just very close to what it is in Rhode Island, which is amazing. And you know how obviously I know Rhode Island's small. I'm from there. But you know what made me realize, A, how small Rhode Island is, and B, how big Maine is? When I first got here to Maine as an anchor at Channel 6, state police from Massachusetts were searching an area of Baxter State Park. They said, the size of Rhode Island.
That's so funny.
I said, wait a minute, an area of a park the size of Rhode Island. So that really put into perspective how big Maine is.
Right. I mean, Maine with, I think, 35,800 something square miles, you could fit the other five New England states in.
Yep, you can.
But, okay, so we won't pick on Rhode Island.
No, clearly, you
came to its defense. In future shows, we'll talk about South and North Dakota combining just to be Dakota.
That's fine. I have no problem with that.
No problem with the Dakotas one. Yeah. I mean, having a North and South feels like it's a little bit overkill or a little bit redundant.
I agree.
So growing up in Rhode Island, talk a little bit about how that led to your interest in journalism, going to, looks like, University of Rhode Island. Yeah. And then we'll talk about how you transitioned up here in Maine.
Sure. Yeah, I was in eighth grade, and I said, oh, that's what I want to do. We had a local TV anchor. His name was Doug White. He worked for the NBC affiliate in Providence. And he came in to speak at our career day in eighth grade at my junior high. And I listened to him, and I remember exactly where I was sitting in the auditorium. I remember holding my blue English folder, and I said, that's it. That's what I want to do. And it was my focus ever since eighth grade.
I did career day in Yarmouth last year and the year before, and I always wondered, like, half the kids are kind of nodding off, and my son was one of them, which became a family discussion way. But I always wonder, because all it takes is one kid really keying in, and you have the opportunity to really alter it, maybe change the course of somebody's interest. And in your case, in eighth grade, you heard a presentation, and you were like, I want to go. I want to be a TV anchor. I want to be on television.
I knew right then and there. I even walked up. I got his autograph. And years later, after graduating and getting my first job behind the scenes at that same NBC affiliate, I worked with him.
Wow.
Of course, I think I aged him a little when I told him that. But he was. I could tell he was a little proud of that fact that, he is the sole reason. He inspired me.
So at some point, years from now, 10, 20 years, somebody's going to come up to me and say, Steve, career day, Harrison Middle School, I heard about event marketing, and now I'm really into experiential.
You never know. That's the beauty of it. See, and it's such an interesting lesson, too, is that you never know sometimes what you say and your behaviors and how they can affect people for the rest of their lives.
I mean, it doesn't have to be career day. It could be a person on the street.
Exactly.
It could be somebody, over the course of your career, you've done hundreds and hundreds of public events, and you've done things associated with news, but also just charity and community things. One person coming up to you could you could really impact their lives or change their lives, right?
It's incredible if you think about it that way. It's true.
So you went to University of Rhode Island, and then you know, as most people in broadcast media, there's kind of a it almost feels like it's a farm league. It's like minor league baseball. You go to a tiny market. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of goes into the tiny market. Maybe they start as a reporter. Maybe they start as a production assistant. Maybe they start on air, Saturday, midnight weather, whatever. And then you move up the food chain, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it.
So talk about some of your steps starting out and your first real break in terms of broadcast media and where you went from there.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, as you said, you graduate and you have this tape. You have a, instead of a paper resume, which you have the video resume and all your work from college. And you make hundreds of them and you just send them all over the country. And you hope someone says, yes, you know, this is, you know, we want you as a reporter. So I ended up working at actually a health insurance company full time Monday through Friday. And I got a job behind the scenes as sort of like an assistant producer. So I was editing videotape and helping write the shows on the weekend. So I was working 60 hours a week, which was great for me. Loved it. And then I took a chance. I quit the Monday through Friday and went full time behind the scenes, and just worked as much as I could. And then I got my first break at a little cable station in Fall River, Massachusetts, which was great. I was there for 2 years. And then from there, the big break was a CBS affiliate in Wisconsin. I took the job over the phone, wow, packed a U-Haul. My dad and I, we drove out and became a Packers fan for a couple of years.
WSAW, right? Mm-hmm. In Wausau, Wisconsin.
That's right. North Central Wisconsin.
How big of a market is that?
It was 137.
So that's pretty small.
It's pretty small. It's pretty small. You know, you're making peanuts. You're basically paying them to work. But, you do what you can. And it was great. It was a great experience. I mean, it really was. Reporting and being in a whole different cultural, environment as well, and getting to anchor. And in fact, I was you'll love this. I was the weekend anchor, but I was also the assignment editor. I was the editor of the show, and I was the producer of the show. So I'm running the teleprompter with my foot, but
this was back in 1996, 97, back when there was tape and editing bays. Mm-hmm. Like right now, everything's digitized for the most part. But back then, it was, I was trying to think of the movie before we went on the air, the Robert Redford, Michelle Pfeiffer movie.
Up Close and Personal.
Up Close and Personal. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that movie?
As a news person, you're like, you can't just pick up a camera and go live on the beach without cords and a truck.
I know, but it's Robert Redford and Michelle Pfeiffer.
That's true.
But part of the story was her passion for journalism, a little bit like yours, coming from a small town, sending in a tape, and then some news director, the Robert Redford character, saying, yeah, let's give her a shot. And she did, and before you knew it, it ended in tragedy. I mean, I don't think I'm. This isn't a spoiler alert to tell people that Robert Redford died. But she went from like the lowest level of local news into Miami, a bigger market, than New York or D.C., wherever she was, and then she was on the network, and it really showed a little bit of the background. Obviously, it was Hollywood, so it wasn't.
Sure.
But you had to relate to that a little bit, right?
Oh, no, I did. And I understood. And her passion and her wanting, to get the best stories and to do a great job and to be able to go to the bigger market. But also in the fact that, yes, you get to the bigger market, but sometimes the smaller markets are better for obvious reasons because you have more of a family life and your husband or boyfriend or whoever, Robert Redford is back in the smaller market. So, and that was part of my story, too. Not that I know how far I would have gotten, but when I was in Wisconsin, all I wanted to do was get back to New England. And so I remember sending tapes to, this job, WCSH. I remember seeing it in Wausau, Portland, Maine. I'm like, that's perfect. And I remember, and there was 100, they got 100 tapes, unfortunately. They chose me, which is actually funny because Bill Green, I'm sure everyone knows who Bill Green is, right?
Oh, jeez. Right? Between Shannon Moss and Bill Green, everyone knows. Bill Green is actually a neighbor. He lives in Cumberland, but he does, just a few weeks ago, we had a Veterans Day event in Yarmouth, and I invited Bill, and he spoke, and he's been on the show a number of times. Bill Green is iconic. He's like a national treasure, right?
Yes, he absolutely is.
So he played a role when you first came?
He did. In fact, it's a funny one, and to this day we still joke about it.
By the way, we have Shannon Moss here because we're just carrying on, but Shannon, everyone should know, she's been an anchor reporter on WCSH Channel 6 for about 8 years, news anchor at WMTW Channel 8. And now she hosts a really interesting, really fun show, Split Screen with Shannon Moss. You can find that at her website, www.shannonmoss.com. But talk a little bit about Bill Green and the impact on your early career.
Yeah, well, apparently when they received all these tapes, they had a bunch of people from different departments at Channel 6 and just sort of go through them and decide who they thought would be the best person to fit it. Because at Channel 6, they were, you know, yes, they wanted someone that was talented, obviously, and experienced, but they also wanted someone that they thought would fit into the newsroom because they're very, they think that's very important, which I agree, is the personalities that they all blend well together because it's like a family. So it comes down to apparently me and this, as Bill tells it, a beauty queen from San Diego. And he says to me, you know, Shannon, it came down to you and this beauty queen from San Diego. And I said to everyone, yes, but who's going to come in at 3 a.m. for Storm Center and hang out in a snowstorm? He's like, that one. And it was me. So I said, wait a minute, is that a compliment? I can't. It's like one of those backhanded compliments. So I got the job over the beauty queen from San Diego.
Well, I'm sure what he meant to say is you certainly could have been a beauty queen if that was the focus of your path. But you picked, journalism is a lifelong pursuit. And so you paid your dues in Wisconsin.
I did.
So what was that like? Talk a little bit about coming to Maine. So you grew up in Rhode Island and you worked with a station in Wisconsin for a while. And all of a sudden you get the call, hey, we want you to come to Maine and be on Channel 6. And talk a little bit about what that period of broadcast journalism was like in the early years. And then later on, I want to kind of juxtapose where we are today with journalism and what it means to be both in terms of on air and the decisions, the editorial decisions that go into it. But talk about what your first experiences were here in Portland, which is a pretty big market.
It is. And they were great. I loved coming here. I love being a part of the community. I love covering stories. To me, it's always about the people. It's the people. The best part about this job is you always learn something new every day and that you get to meet the most incredible people with the most amazing stories. We did this series called Get Out Alive. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Back in the, probably early 2000s. Got here in 1999. And it was great. I mean, we worked with a lot of public safety personnel throughout the state, a lot of fire departments, a lot of police departments. And we would go into a burning building and we would show people how to get out. We would fall through the ice and show them how to get out of the ice.
Wow.
And it was sort of like they were, you know, we would demonstrate that. Of course, we had all the safety procedures in place. We were with the best top departments in Maine. But it was wonderful. And those series, it really did a lot for people. I remember people would email me or call me and say, wow, that really made a difference. It's made me think in a different way now, which was the whole point of them. So those are proud stories for me.
I'm very familiar with Get Out Alive, and in one of the episodes, you are literally crawling through a burning building. And it feels like that brand of journalism was geared towards either a public need or some public interest. How do you, and again, we're going to flip back and forth a little bit from present day to when you started here in Portland, but how does that compare to something, as an example, like the Zumba trial this summer, where you would think that it was all Zumba all the time?
Yeah.
And every news crew, every wire service reporter, every radio guy, the BDN, the Portland Press Herald, the one story that wasn't covered that probably should have been was the economic impact of having all the media down there in Kennebunk during this trial. And at some point, they ran out of content, or news content, in my opinion. At some point, something illegal happened or was alleged. It involved some salacious details with a Zumba instructor who was also, as it turns out, running kind of a prostitution business. It had a guy, the Mark Strong guy, who played some role. In his mind, it was love. I think the police and the district attorney thought it was some criminal activity. But you would think, by the amount of coverage, that it was so imperative in public. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was a bunch of names on lists. And I think it was right to go through kind of a prosecution process. But to me, the fascinating part was how the media reacted. They couldn't get out of each other's way, where at every single turn, it was in the A block of every newscast. Here's what's happening in Zumba. There was a thing. There was a motion. The Zumba trial has been delayed for 1 week, and you would think that was breaking news. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, you were crawling through a burning building and jumping in ice water, telling people, "Hey, this type of journalism may save your life or impact your life."
Journalism's changed. It's not the same. It's not what it used to be. It's you know, and you know why that story. You know what? That was a misdemeanor. It wasn't even a felony.
Right.
We weren't even talking felony charges. But what made that story so popular is because of all the things you mentioned. Because you had this Zumba instructor who also happened to be this beautiful woman. It was Kenny Bunk. So you had the Delic Maine community.
You had Johns. Community. You had the unknown. Who's on it?
Right.
Who's
exactly.
Not on it.
You know, and unfortunately. That's what the story was about. Every Friday was, it's Friday, which means the list is coming out. And, and it's unfortunate. Journalism has changed. It's not what it used to be.
It felt dirty.
It was dirty. It didn't feel dirty. It was dirty.
It was dirty.
It was dirty.
It felt like that journalism, and not just journalism, but I think media and I think many areas of society have morphed into pandering to the most base of human because it was kind of voyeuristic. It was very salacious, but it didn't serve the public good. It didn't. We have so many challenges here in Maine. We have so many economic challenges. We have so many educational health challenges. We have, in aggregate, the oldest population that are facing some very unique economic health, day-to-day living challenges. Mm-hmm. Those things don't feel, and there's exceptions, but it doesn't feel like we're covering that. And instead of every single journalist in Maine camped out in Kenny Bunkport to see who is either on the list or what's happening with the Zumba person.
Right. Well, and that goes local as well as national. I remember being on the anchor desk, several months ago, and it was the time when, Washington, we had several crisis is going on and several investigations. It was Benghazi. It was also the IRS. There was several things going on. And I'll never forget that Good Morning America led with, for 15 minutes, it was their top story, Angelina Jolie and her double mastectomy that she decided to do. And I'm not saying that's not newsworthy, but I don't think that's an A-block story when you have a Hollywood celebrity who has all the funds in the world that can afford to do that. It's fine to cover that. It's news, but not in the A-block, not your first 50 minutes of the show. And they didn't even touch the other stuff that was going on. So it's not just a local issue. It's a national issue. And I think that, and what I hope this isn't happening, is that, the news will say, well, we're just covering what people want to see. You know, if we cover those stories that you were talking about, like the issues that are going on in our state, people don't want to hear about that. I don't think they're giving people enough credit.
Right.
I think that they're looking to the news because journalists have an incredible responsibility. You know, we're supposed to report the facts. We're supposed to report what is going on in our state and how that affects people. But the viewer also needs to trust that station because they're not out there finding out the news. That's our job. So if we're just covering stuff like the Zumba trial, we're missing out and not informing them on what else is going on in the state that they do need to know about.
I agree.
And that's a disservice.
And we have Shannon Moss here in the Time Smart Studio. Do you ever watch the show Newsroom, Aaron Sorkin?
You know, I haven't. Many people ask me. I know.
You have to.
I heard it's great.
Again, there may be elements that are not realistic in terms of day-to-day.
I heard it's close.
But he is such a powerful and poetic writer. And it's on HBO, and I think Jeff Daniels is the lead. Mm-hmm. But the theme on the show is the anchor is kind of this idealistic national cable anchor, and he's railing against the kind of Zumba stuff, and they're trying to do it different. And so every show is about how they're prioritizing the news and how they're trying to push back the interest of advertisers and the people in the ratings department that are saying, no, move this up to the A block and the B block. And it's really kind of fast. But you know what? It's no broadcast news since we're talking with Sharon. Yeah, I love talking about movies, and so I'm gonna do something self. How about Broadcast News with Albert Brooks?
Oh, that's a great movie. That's a classic.
I got to tell you a quick funny story. I was in Atlanta about 15 years ago, and I was involved with sports, and I was a sports agent, and I ran a tennis tournament, and there was a nightly sports show that was done down there called Sports Unlimited. And I was a guest every few weeks, and I'd come on, and in my mind, I was just killing it. So 1 week, the host called up and said, hey, listen, I'm scheduling my vacation next month. and they want me to have a guest host on each of the five nights. Will you take Tuesday? And they had, like, Dominique Wilkins from the Hawks on one night. They had another anchor on another. So I said, you want me to host the whole show? And it was a one-hour show.
Wow.
Live in Atlanta. Big market, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, God, I am such a great guest. I think I will be a great host. And I said, of course, and it was driven by, misplaced ego. And so a few days before, I'm going through with producers and kind of formatting the show, and we're going to do, but I had to have two or three guests in a couple of the different segments. At that point, I was representing athletes. So I had Kevin Willis, and I think I had Dave Justice on the Braves come in. And just before the show, I was sitting there at the desk, and they have the ear thing in, and I'm talking to the producer, and the countdown clock is on there, and it's like 2 minutes, 1 minute, 42, and I'm thinking, this is a piece of cake. And then the floor producer went, 5, 4, 3. The camera came on.
Oh, no.
And I died out there.
Oh, no.
It was like Albert Brooks in broadcast news.
The sweat started coming off.
I'm looking into the camera. And the sweat started coming off. It was just like that. My wife still has the tape.
Oh, no.
And every once in a while, she'll break it out. If she thinks you're getting kind of big for your britches, I'm going to pull out the sweat tape. And I'm like, no, please don't. It was the most uncomfortable hour of my life.
Oh.
And I would have a guest on, and it would be like an NBA player, and I'd be looking at him asking something about baseball. A producer in my ear would be saying, we're cutting away in 32 seconds. I'd say into the mic, cutting away? What are you talking about? It was like the worst of television experience in my life. And at the end of it, nobody said anything. It was like when a plane lands, bounces on the runway, and then the plane stops. There's no cheering. There was no clapping. That there was a sense of, well, we're alive. And so when I watch people like you hosting, whether they're news shows or your new show, which I want to talk about, it is such an art and a science to manage the process of not only the content, but just being able to effectively communicate in live time. I couldn't do it. Just bringing it up, I'm starting to sweat.
You're having flashbacks.
I am having flashbacks because when the camera goes red and you're live, I can't run. I can't hide. It's not on tape. I can't say, okay, let's do that over.
You know what's funny, though, about that? It's so funny how people's brains work, because for me, it's the complete opposite. You know, yes, I do a lot of public speaking, and I do a lot of charitable events, which I love, but I get a little nervous doing those because I can see all the people. But as soon as that red light goes on and the camera goes on, I feel at home.
Well, that's funny. But you've been doing it so long and doing it at such a high level that...
I guess. I feel comfortable. I'm like, I got this. I feel the most confident. But again, he put me in front of a bunch of people to speak, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I can do it, but I do get sort of the butterflies and the nervousness.
That's funny. By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m., also WLOBradio.com and Tide Smart Radio. Let me bring up another subject here.
Sure.
And I think it's a positive subject, but I think over the years it's been one that has been publicly debated a little bit, your hair. I love your hair. And in this case, I wish we weren't on radio. I wish people could see how lovely you're, you know, I can't tell you what the design is. Is it a bob or what do you have
it's
going?
It's kind of a modern bob, yes.
Yeah, it's a modern bob. But people in this market between your work at Channel 6 and Channel 8 seem to have really keyed on your hair as being a distinctive part of the visual medium of television.
Yes, and not this, of course.
Not this.
Right, yeah.
But no, this, of course, it's... You know, you could be on People magazine. That's a
nondescript.
It's a stunning bob. But at some point, did you make a conscious decision to present your hair in a way that it became an iconic feature? Or was it something that it was just a personal, this is the way I like to have my hair? And at what point did your hair take on its own identity?
Okay, so obviously I've been born with very naturally curly hair. It's very, very curly. And I've worn it that way my whole life. But when I... my college professor, who I'm still in touch with to this day, said to me when I graduated, Shannon, I'll never forget this quote, I know you won't have any problems in this business except for one, your hair. And I laughed at him. I thought it was a joke, and it was the most profound statement that I've heard. I straightened it to get jobs because I couldn't get a job with curly hair. And then finally, when I got to Channel 6 after years of straightening it, it started to fall out. It started to, you know, it was right. You know, constantly all that heat and whatnot, processing it. Anyway, so I remember telling my news director at the time, you're either going to have a curly-haired anchor or a bald one. And he actually had to think about it. He's like, and they did test shots. And I said, yeah, I guess we'll try it. And they, while they were so supportive, and Channel 6 to this day has been the most supportive with my hair, and they were, people either loved it or they hate it. But the onslaught of negative email and letters was tremendous. I still have them to this day.
That has to, yeah, especially when you're talking about at its core, television news and journalism really should be about the journalism, but somehow your hair played a big role.
These people said it wasn't professional; it was a distraction, and I get that. I mean, it was curly, but it was me though, and it was who I was. It was fit my personality. It was what I was born with. I got my curls from my grandmother. I was kind of proud of them.
Right.
But oh yeah, it was it's a big controversy to this day.
I don't think it's a guy, again, whether it was then or now, big fan of your hair.
Thanks.
If your hair had a Twitter account, I would follow it.
Maybe you're onto something there.
let's use that as a segue into an area of the media I would like to talk about and get your perspective in. That is, do you think there's a double standard in the media as far as men and
yes.
women? And is that something, what is it based on? Is it because I watch, In my office, I most of the day I keep on CNBC just to keep up on client news and what's going on in the market. And if there's mm-hmm. a giant meltdown, I'd like to
sure,
know what's going on. I'd like to be the first to, you know, run to the bank and, you know, I'm kidding, withdraw my money as a big meltdown. But you see it on all levels. You see it on the network shows. You see it on the Weather Channel. You see it on CNBC where it feels, and I don't know how to measure it, but it feels like program directors, news directors apply a different aesthetic standard to women than men. And I want to get your thoughts on it because their argument would be, well, testing kind of controls everything. Everything has to be tested, right? So in your career, I'm sure the different stations have done tests and focus mm-hmm. groups, and what do you think about this anchor? And again, that applies to kind of like maybe a low base instinct of either viewer or consumer decision making. But is it fair? Is it fair if it's supposed to be about journalism, or ultimately is it about business and viewership and then being able to sell ads for the maximum amount of money to make money for the station?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a double standard. And I think women are held to that higher standard much more than men are. I mean, it's just sort of, I don't know, that, you know, they give more of a break to guys, I guess. Like, you know, you can have an overweight weather guy who's bald and that's okay because, you know, with bad ties, or that's just
right,
that
right.
person. But a woman could never do that. You know, if she's not dressing appropriately, or if she doesn't have like a perfect hair cut or style, then they are held to a much different standard. And it's very unfair.
But why? I mean, the root of the question is, I agree there's a double standard. But is it a standard that is just arbitrary and unfair that management of stations are using? Or is it really based, you know, most things in you know, whether it's media or day-to-day life is rooted in kind of capitalism and money and mm-hmm. all that. If these stations feel as though there's more money attached to women who live up to a certain aesthetic value, in their judgment, it's not my judgment,
right.
then are they making those decisions based on money? Are they making it based on personal bias? Because it's not fair. And, you know, I was mentioning CNBC. You know, you watch CNBC during the day, and I don't know how to say this tactfully, but many of the women who have broadcast roles on CNBC look like they're models.
Right.
And some have great business background and great understanding of economics and finance. Some apparently don't. But then you have all these guys, as you said, guy's overweight, he's got a bald spot, one guy has a ponytail, another guy kind of like looks away and says kind of crazy things. They're held to one standard. And then, but is it about money, or is it something, is some sort of anthropological kind of like, we just want to have more attractive women? And how do we change it? And can it be changed?
I wish it could be changed. I mean, I remember I watch the news now, same thing, Fox News, CNBC, whatever, and every woman has a sleeveless dress on, looks like they're going to a cocktail party.
Right.
I remember, you know, going through journalism school and you wore a suit jacket and your hair was always to a certain length, and now they're wearing long hair and crazy earrings, and it's completely changed. And I don't know whether it's the cat chasing the tail, if it's the public or if it's management. But I think a lot of it is the public, too. I mean, I don't, you know, certainly don't want to say anything negative about the viewers, or I love them and they've been wonderful and they're so loyal to me. But I can tell you a lot of it is research. For instance, I know that the station spent a lot of money to do research on the people that this local personalities. And when my hair was curly, I was almost let go because it was so much of a distraction where did people know me? Yes, very much so. But when it went to style, it plummeted.
What?
Because people didn't like my hair. So that almost got me fired, which is sad in a way that I almost got fired because my hair was curly.
It is sad.
So, you know, it's one of those. It's kind of, again, like the cat chasing the tail. It's one, you know, it's like the viewers, again, holding people maybe women to a higher standard. It's been a very interesting experience for me.
I know, but part of it, maybe it is just driven by you know, the consumerism.
I think so. But I think the management takes it a step too far, though. Instead, because I said, you know, instead of backing their people and saying, you know, this is a journalist, you know, and going away from what the consumerism is, I think they're only pushing it even further.
Right. I agree. Let me ask you another couple questions. I don't know if we can solve that.
I don't either.
I don't know. You know.
And I don't want to sound angry either, because I'm not an angry person.
Well, you're not angry. I'm a little angry, so I can be angry.
I get frustrated with it, though, because I think it's just going down a wrong path.
Well, I mean, there's a broader topic here in terms of journalism going in the wrong path, and we'll talk about that for a sec. Talk a little bit about you've since 1996, when you first started in beautiful Wausau, Wisconsin, working for WSAW, you've been involved with major broadcast media. But looking in the broadcast area, you've worked with both Gannett and Hearst, which are big, large media companies. Do you think the consolidation of media companies has either helped in the efficiency of providing resources, which I don't think, or do you think it's hurt in terms of the focus on journalism and in journalistic standards? And the consolidation, I think, is just get out of control. And whether it's in radio with giant, you know, Clear Channel conglomerates owning almost all the stations in a market, mm-hmm. it's creating a situation where local interest, local control, local decision-making has been reduced in favor of the conglomerate model. And what's your experience in terms of journalism in that area?
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that, especially, you know, in one case, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's Gannett, who owns two stations, two different affiliates in, I believe it's Jacksonville, Florida. So it seems crazy to me that you don't, I believe, you know, it's an ABC and an NBC. So you're competing against each other, but you own both of them.
Right.
It's just a very interesting.
I think Channel 13 just bought Fox.
They did, Sinclair. Yes, Sinclair bought Fox.
So now here in Portland, and part of the energy that goes into journalism is doing in-depth reporting and beating out the other stations and not getting beat. And so when you have that natural competition, that drives better work, mm-hmm. better journalism, better reporting,
sure.
harder work. You take that away and you're reduced with reading wire copy on the air.
Right. That's exactly it.
So we both think that's a bad thing. How do we fix that? By the way, we have Shannon Moss here in the studio.
Way above my pay grade.
You are an expert in broadcast media. By the way, Shannon Moss is here. And by the way, you can go to her website, which is really interesting. I was on it earlier this morning, shannonmoss.com. Her new show, which we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes, Split Screen. But there's no way, because everything's consolidated. Almost every food companies have consolidated, energy companies have consolidated, airlines consolidated.
It's like gobbling everything up.
There'll be like one company at the end of the whole deal.
The monopoly. It'd be awful.
And they'll say, listen, this is good for you, the consumer. They'll be lying.
They'll be telling us, yep, what's good for us.
Big liars. Now let's move on to Split Screen. And so in a few months ago, you left Channel 8. And you and I had talked a few months ago, and you had you let me in on the secret of split screen. And you said, hey, Steve, I think I want to do my own production thing. You were on CW for a little bit, and it was designed originally as being kind of a web-based interview show, which I think is great. And I think, what do you have, like 5 or 6 shows already in the can?
6
in the can?
Mm-hmm.
It's really fascinating. And talk a little bit about what the idea was for Split Screen, and talk a little bit about the shows you've done and what it looks like for the future.
Sure. Yeah, well, part of, you know, even being, you know, in the news and meeting all these great people, I knew there were so many more stories to tell. And unfortunately, you know, as we talked about, you know, TV news doesn't lend itself to do these great feature pieces. They don't tend to cover those as much as I think they should, but you know, they kind of want to get that quick, what story can we get in 30 seconds and get it on the air. So when I was not with Channel 8 anymore, I figured, you know what a great opportunity to start telling these stories. There are amazing people out there in Maine. We all know that. You meet them all the time. Everybody does. And I figured, you know, why not? And that was, of course, one of the reasons why I came and chatted with you and to see what you thought.
Right.
And then also add the element, is I know that being a journalist, when you can take somebody out of sort of their environment, someone well-known, that you get a better interview. You don't get those sort of canned answers. And so that was sort of how that part of the show, hence the split screen, came up.
You had a local general ice skating.
I did.
You were out there on the ice. I thought you were doing pretty well on the ice.
It's been a while since I was out there, but it was fun.
Right.
General Bill Livy, yeah, who knew? He's an incredible hockey player, and he loves it. And so we did. We did the interview while out in Saco, the Junior Pirates.
So what are some of the other? And people, if you know, the beauty of this, too, is it's available online. So you don't have to wait till like 11 o'clock at night or 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock to watch Shannon. Right this second. Well, not right this second. Why don't you wait until the end of my radio show? But as soon as the radio show ends, go to www.shannonmoss.com. Or if you're Twitter active, Shannon's Twitter feed is at Shannon Moss TV. And watch some of these shows. They're free to watch.
They are.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, they all are. Absolutely.
Oh, they all are. I've watched all of them. I sit at my screen. I go, what am I going to do? I'm going to go to ESPN and see the highlights of the week.
His nose is growing.
Oh, no. And then I'm going to go watch Shannon Moss talk to people split screen. So what other interviews do you have, and where is the show Split Screen going from here?
Well, the great thing about the show is, again, it's people you know and people you should know. So like you said, General Libby was great. You know, we went ice skating. Linda Greenlaw, we played golf at the Samoset Resort, which was great. And to hear her passion about comparing golf to fishing was just incredible. She's incredible.
Do you have any future shows coming up that people can look forward to?
Yes, actually, we just, one that's going to hit very soon is one with Tim Sample. We went and cut down a Christmas tree, which was a lot of fun.
Tim Sample, the comedian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, the Maine humorist. Yep.
Wow.
But no, he was great. And it's also the people you should know. So we had this great guy, Eric Hughes, who has a developmental disability, and he goes through Strive. And I know you had Pete Brown on the show. And his lifelong dream was to own a food cart. It's what he wanted to do. And he did that through Strive and through a lot of community help and connections and becoming independent and wanting to be a part of the community instead of dependent on it. He has his own business on the Portland waterfront. It's Eric's Pizza Cart, Pizza Express.
Wow.
And he's doing amazing. And everybody knows who he is, and he's an iconic sort of landmark. The duck boat goes by, and they do their little quack at him because he's part of the landscape down there.
You know, and you've had to experience this in your time on air. We have Shannon Moss here, media titan, everything involving media, in terms of an iconic media figure here in Maine. Maine is unique in that we have such an eclectic, interesting, and accomplished universe of people that live here.
We do.
Whereas we have a relatively small economic engine, and whereas we have a relatively small population in a large state, we have a lot of people here that you just don't expect have the backgrounds or have the interest.
Mm-hmm.
But just a few of the people that you rattled off.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's the beauty of it. It's like you find these hidden gems. And then the other great part is people, you know, they hear about the show and then they want to sort of recommend someone.
Right.
And that's what you want, because it's the people who aren't coming forward that I want to highlight, because they're the ones that are humble and they, you know, they're doing it because that's just who they are. And then you have these great people that say, oh, you got to go find this person.
Oh, I have an idea for you for your show, Split Screen. I'll give you a person. About 8 years ago, I'm on an airplane traveling from Chicago back to Portland, and it's a little regional jet. And I'm like, oh boy. So there's a guy next to me directly across the aisle. And he goes, yep, I live up there most of the time. And I'm like, great. And he looks over at me and he sees my paperwork and he goes, so what do you do? And I'm thinking, Well,
let me tell you.
Well, let me tell you. I own this little agency, and you know, and so I say to him, "Well, what do you do?" He goes, "Oh, I work with Motorola." You know, so I'm like, "Are you in sales?" And he goes, "Oh, sort of." I go, "What do you do?" He goes, "I'm a CEO." I'm like, "What? What the heck?" And his name is Dennis Carey. So we talked for 3 hours from Chicago here. His daughter, Reagan Carey, was recently named a couple of years ago, heading up the USA Women's Hockey Program. And then he was originally, I guess, the CFO of Home Depot. He was at GE, he was one of Jack Welch's Six Sigma guys. He headed up a bunch of companies, but he's the most low-key, humble guy. And he spends a lot of his free time building out cabins at this camp. Nobody would know that he's one of the most accomplished business titans in the country.
That's incredible.
But he just, you know, he came to our opening here at TideSmart. And then Governor Baldacci was there. And Governor Baldacci, John, as he asked me to call him, said, "Well, Steve, I really want to talk to you about economic development and stuff." And I'm like, I said, "You know, Governor, or John, the guy you really want to talk to is the guy with the baseball cap 20 feet over there." Because he came to Dennis Carey. And he goes, "Well, who's he?" I go, "I don't know, one of the most accomplished business people I've ever known or met, and he's run multi-billion dollar companies." And so of course, John left me in the dust and ran over and said hi to Dennis Carey.
But you're right. People that, they're so unassuming. You know, You never know who you're talking to.
Authors, scientists.
Right. Artists, you just never know. Philanthropists, you have no idea.
Even a couple of attorneys, which I have kind of a natural aversion to attorneys. I don't know why. Somebody told me an interesting story. I don't know if part of the split screen and part of this exciting chapter of your career. I know your husband's involved and your husband's been a supporter.
Yes.
Did you meet him through television?
No. Well, yes, sort of. We met through our professions. I at an explosion down the street, actually.
Really?
In the Shaw's parking lot.
Your marriage was born from an explosion?
Yes, at the dry cleaners down the street on Route 1 in Falmouth.
Wow.
I was called out of bed at 4 in the morning to go cover the story, and he was working in Falmouth at the time.
And
he was on the scene, and the rest is history.
I know, but
I got there, and I needed to get live, and the firefighters are putting out the fire, and I turn around, and there's this cruiser. I remember thinking, "Oh, jeez, he's never going to tell me anything." And I knocked on the window, and I got the typical, you know, the finger up. You're like, "Hold on a second,
right,
ma'am.
Hold on, you little lady.
Yeah, little lady. I'm a little busy right now." Then he got out of the car, and, you know, he gave me information, and I'll never forget this. He drove up to my live shot when I was done and said, "You know, do anything else?" And I thought he was being a little friendly and helpful. And I said, "Oh, I'm all set." And he said, "Has anyone ever told you you're a lot taller in person than on TV?" And I said, "Yeah, I get that a lot." And he said, "Oh, okay." And then the next thing, 3 days later, I got a bouquet of flowers at Channel 6. And the only thing written on the card, this is what did it. It said, "For being taller than you are on TV." No names, no nothing. No, that was it. And I said, "Oh.
Wow, that is classic."
It was classic.
Sometimes less is more.
Less is more. And I just thought it was, and I'm like, "What was his name? What was his name?" And I remembered it, and then the rest is history.
But. See, that's a little bit like the Robert Redford Michelle. Let's loop right back around. There was something magical, and it happened at a fire. And I've got to tell you, that was gutsy for him to reach out.
Yeah, he'd never done anything like that before. Yeah, the guys were giving him a hard time at the police department. They're like, "I can't believe you did that." She's like, and he's like, "Oh," he's like, then he started to stress out, but he said, "I had to give it a shot."
That is so classic. That may be a made-for-TV movie right there. Maybe that becomes chapter 4, chapter 5 in the Shannon Moss story.
You know, you never know. You never know. But yeah, it's an interesting story how we met, that's for sure.
Wow, fantastic.
And I remember actually Andy saying to me when we started dating, "You know, I'm sure you're going to go off to other markets." And I said, "You know, to me, success is doing something that I love, but also having a family and living in a wonderful place to raise that family. To me, that's success. I don't need to keep climbing markets and then turn around and say, you know, who do I have to share it with? Nobody." So that's also one of the reasons why I decided to stay in Maine and not continue.
Well, great.
To climb markets, yeah.
Well, now that I'm getting a little weepy here, let's shift gears. You're listening to TideSmart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. I have the one and only Shannon Moss of the beautiful hair, the wonderful hair, but more importantly, the incredible talent on air, Channel 6, Channel 8. Now you can see her at shannonmoss.com with her show Split Screen. Talk a little bit about social media and digital media. I see not only you have a website, but your Twitter account, Shannon Moss TV. I think there's a problem now in journalism in how the public digest information, where it's harder and harder to discern what information is coming across is real journalism, what is opinion, what is opt-ed, what are blogger contributions. Because 20, 30 years ago, you know, now I'm kind of dating myself, but 20, 30 years ago, if Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes said something's going on in Nicaragua, you just believed him. Mm-hmm. Walter Cronkite said, here's what's going on in the economy, or we have this health. You accepted that in order, you know, and I grew up in Boston, so the Boston Globe was kind of the paper of record. If you wanted to get news, if you wanted to get titillation, you read the Boston Herald. But the Boston Globe, you pretty much looked at. The New York Times, and right, you know, L.A. Times, there are newspapers, Chicago Tribune. There were print newspapers and broadcast that people looked to and said, hey, there's credibility. We may not agree with whatever the story is, but there's credibility in the journalism, that there's facts. Mm-hmm. And journalism has this rooted premise of the journalist, unless it's a clearly identified opinion column or opt-ed, they're not supposed to show their bias. What are the facts? What happened? When did it happen? What was the budget? Who said what? But we're now at a point, as we close out 2013, where if you go online, you look at Twitter, or you look at really even the Portland Press Herald and the Bangor Daily News, they have little pockets of journalism, but they're so interspersed with contributor content and blogger content and opinion content that many readers and then viewers, I fear, are not do not have the clarity of what is journalism and what is opinion. And I think we're for the worse for wear.
We are. You're absolutely right. And it's so cloudy now, it's hard to see through the haze of what is real journalism. You said, I'm an old school journalist. I'm all about you deliver the facts. You give both sides to a story. You let the viewer or the listener decide. Everything you say should be confirmed, if not once, twice. Because what happens is, and I think it all started before even social media, started with the 24-hour cable networks. Because what's happening is every time something happens out there in the country, you've got these anchors who are already on, and they're spewing out information, little bits of facts from reporters on the scene, or they bring in experts to talk about something they don't even know what's happened yet. And what happens is later they have to go back and retract and correct some of the mistakes that they made. And I think that's a huge disservice to the viewer, because like you said, it's not when Mike Wallace went on there, or even Peter Jennings or Tom Brokaw, you know, you knew what they were saying was fact.
Right.
And now you just can't be 100% sure.
It's also about speed. I mean, whenever a story breaks, breaking story, you know, Zumba trial gets delayed a week. We were joking about that earlier, but there's a serious point here. There, you can see the journalist standing there, teeing up their Twitter feed, writing it already, waiting to hit send. So somewhere along the line, some producer can do a crawl that says, first with the news, you know, Channel 6, first to bring you the news that Zumba woman gets 6 months in jail, first to bring you the news of this. And it's less about quality. It's
right.
Less about research. It's less about context. And it's more about the simplicity of, we were the first to hit our Twitter button.
That used to drive me crazy. It's better to be last and right than first and wrong. I'll tell you that much. And another thing, too, is I could never understand that we were first. We had the exclusive. Because if someone's already watching you, what do they care if you're first or not? Like, I never understood that concept. I always say, give the viewer some credit.
Right.
That's one thing about the news that always used to drive me crazy, is that whole exclusive. We were first. We had it first.
But it must mean something, right? Because you worked in the business,
I
and
did.
Whether it's Gannett or Hearst, or whether it's Channel 6 or 8 or 13 or Fox or whatever, they all do it. So there's got to be it's got to be rooted in a reason. It can't just be this, you know, reckless impulse.
I think it's, you know, a marketing strategy. I think they think that that's what's going to grab viewers, that, oh, they had it first, so they must always have all the, you know, the breaking news first before everybody else. But sometimes I think, and again, this is my business, and I'm not trashing it in any way, but in a way, I still sometimes think stations don't give the viewer enough credit.
Right.
Viewers are very loyal. I have found that out more than anyone. Viewers are tremendously loyal and are like family, and they will stay with you.
Well, in the last couple of minutes we have, and this has been great, we have Shannon Moss here in the studio. Talk about politics in Maine. And, you know, we talk about giving viewers credit. And every political cycle, the political machine gears up and the broadcast media coverage machines gear up, and there's candidate profiles, there's debates, and there's all that. Oh, by the way, 2012, do you remember yelling at me at the debate? Do you remember that, Shan, now that I have you on the air?
Now I'm surprised he asked me.
Now I can yell at you. Now I could, I'm kidding. I've read for United States Senate, and we had a live televised debate. And I think, I'm sure I was droning on long. But in the middle of my answer, Shannon Moss yelled at me.
What did I say?
Well, you said something polite and professional, I'm sure, but the subtext was, shut up, candidate Steve Woods. just shut up. People want to hear Angus King talk.
I'm kidding,
of course.
That's not true.
But I ended up going, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Shannon Moss. But in terms of politics, this is the thing I'm most passionate about here in Maine. I think democracy was designed and exists as a participation. Participation.
It's a hard participatory? No, that's not a word.
Well, you've got to participate.
There we go. Let's make it easy.
Yeah, you've got to participate. And that's 238 years ago. That's how it was founded. And it's critical in a state like Maine, where we have about 1.3 million people and about 917,000 registered voters, that everyone – I'm less concerned about people voting right, left, blue, red, elephant, donkey. I don't even know what some of those symbols mean. But my thing is, I want people to be informed on whether it's the Affordable Care Act or whether it has to do with legislative issues going on in Maine. The more people are informed on the underlying facts and details – I have some faith in the electorate that they'll make good decisions. Mm-hmm. But when things are just reduced to popularity contest and name recognition without any context, that, I think, is the biggest issue we have in democracy. I don't think it's about the partisanship. I don't think it's about the other stuff. I think those things are derivative from a disengaged electorate. What role do you think, from your experience, the media plays in either really informing the public or just reflecting what the public wants to know about politics?
Well, I think in this particular case, this is where the media has a big responsibility. You know, and every station's different. You know, there are some, and not just stations, but newspapers as well, where there are some that will have debates and will only have the top three candidates. You know, is that fair that you exclude the other people that are running because they may not be in a, you know, your certain, don't fit your criteria?
Well, the Press Herald did that too. They made a decision early in the Senate campaign to reflect the three the two-party candidates, who, of course, Cynthia Dill and Angus King is the independent, and Charlie Summers, who's the Republican. But it's a catch-22. If you don't create visibility or access for the other candidates, then you're in a closed system, in a closed universe.
Right. And I understand on one aspect that it's harder to do a debate with that many people because you have, if it's an hour debate, you know, there's less questions that you can ask because there's less time. I understand that as well.
Right.
But I still, you know, you have to be able to include everybody, I think, that's involved in the process.
I agree. I think we've run out of time, but this has been so great having you here, Shannon. I hope you come back sometime.
I would love to. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
And everyone, now that this interview's over, you can run to your computer, type in shannonmoss.com, or go to her Twitter feed, ShannonMossTV, and please support her show, Split Screen. I think it's entertaining. I think it's informative, and I think it reflects Maine. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLB, 1310 AM. Thanks for listening.